I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nice and Saturday Arvo, supported by Lacole. This podcast, they make it possible. This is the Critérium du Dauphiné Stage 7 recap, the first big mountain stage, and this was a barnst. I really loved it, actually. Yep. It was super exciting on the final climb. This is a great stage. I encourage you to go watch the final climb. 172 Ks, Col du Pre 13K, 7.7%. It's a flat first 100 meters before that climb. We saw footage starting live images really late at the top of the Cornet de Roselon, 6K, 6% after a false summit after the Col du Pre, then a long descent and then a valley before La Plagne up to 2,064 meters, 17Ks, 7.4% up. It's super regular, very consistent gradients. And if you've got a strong train, you can do big, big damage on this climb. And yeah, Benji and I were super excited about it because this is a big weekend of GC action at the Critérium du Dauphiné. But when footage did start, Benji, what did we see and who was taking control in the GC group?
When the race started, we had that flat section before the climb start. And on that flat section, it's easier for rouleurs to get in the breakaway. So for example, you've got a Mikkel Bjerk, a Marco Heller, a Velgren, those type of riders. But we also had climbers that were in the breakaway today. We had Craddock once again. This time around, he wasn't the strongest rider in the breakaway. Jorge Arcas for Movistar, so a potential satellite rider for that team. Kenny Elizondo for Trek-Segafredo. Martin Tussfeld for DSM. We've got Roland there as well. Steph Cross for Lotto Soudal. And also Bonamour, a teammate for Pierre Roland. It seemed like Pierre Roland was interested in potentially gaining the KOM points on the stage, but that wasn't the most important battle on today's stage because we went on to the Col du Pré. And we noticed that, well, two of the breakaway riders were already dropping. The teammate of Roland Bonamour, but also Steph Cross, was getting caught by the peloton. Then on to Comer de Roselon. We finally got proper images near the top, a bit into the descent already for some regions. And we noticed that in the peloton, Movistar was taking control with Erviti at the front of the peloton, setting a decent pace. Breakaway lost a few of its candidates before the actual top of the Comer de Roselon as the rouleurs tried to get rid of the climbers before the final climb of the day, La Plagne, and that offered the option for a Valgren to get in the breakaway and launch away from the other companions together with a few of the other people in the breakaway. So with Haller, that was. Then the second group was Pierre Roland, for example, with an Elizondo. So the climbers were a bit behind there. Now, the interesting thing is that on screen it said Hundal, and I wasn't sure, like, is this Valgren now? Because, like, this, I didn't know he also had a name, Hundal, but yeah, small detail, I guess. Nonetheless, peloton, Movistar, they were setting up for something. Breakaway, we had the climbers a tiny bit behind the rouleurs going into the final climb, which is La Plagne, and that's where the action started. Movistar still had Arcas a bit ahead. He wasn't caught yet, so he could come into play later on, but they were really setting up a decent pace at the start of the climb. Erviti was already off the front by that point, and we saw that Verona was starting to take over, and to be fairly honest, I thought, yeah, Movistar is ready. Lopez is going to do something here. But at a certain point, a different team was coming to the front and was taking over their pacing.
Yeah, Ineos came to the front with, I think, Amador. So their trainers, Amador, Van Baal, Kwiatkowski, actually Kwiatkowski before Van Baal, and then Rodriguez, Gegenhardt, and Port, as well as Thomas. So Port and Thomas, probably their GC guys. And it was pretty obvious to me, and it was obvious to Movistar, that Ineos are riding a defensive false pace. They often do this. They move to the front quickly, and then they slow it right back down. And you could see the group bunching up behind them. And Movistar called their bluff. They came back to the front. They then had Arcas up the road. And Movistar basically just started drilling this and putting a lot of riders under pressure. They've got, I think Marcy's like a minute plus back on GC, so not ideal because of his TT was so bad, and Lopez is not as far back, but still needing to make up a lot of time. So Ineos have the port card to play because his TT was so good. And the big question we were thinking of is when Erviti finishes his pull, Will Alejandro Valverde make good on his promise from yesterday and pull hard for Miguel Angel Lopez, or will Mas even pull? Because it's no good. We've got like 8Ks, 9Ks, 9Ks plus left in this climb over 20 minutes. It's no good just pulling for the first 5Ks and then just having your 3 leaders or 2 leaders just sit there and no one else pulling for them. They're not going to, it's too far for them to attack. But the climb opened up really early because Valverde did do that pull, and then there was no plan B for Movistar. After Valverde pulls off and goes back into the groove, he didn't pull fully, their port immediately attacks off the front for Ineos, because Lopez and Mas, they'd gone back 10th, 11th wheel, I think, to Mark Sepkus. I don't really understand. And yeah, look, port attacks, Mas then bridges to him, then Mark Padun for Bahrain victorious, and Kus bridge to that group. So Kus is far back on GC, Padun is really far back on GC, not a threat at all. And eventually Padun and Kus attack off the port and Mas group. So there's a bit of port was pulling a lot, Mas was sitting and marking him, which I think is pretty sensible, especially if port's going to ride for him, and Padun and Kus going for the stage. Kus follows Padun, and we're thinking, well, Ineos won't be too mad about this. They can let Kus have 30 seconds. His TT lost so much time, and Padun's so far back on GC. Padun and Kus relaying initially back in the GC group. So then we've got 3 groups on the road, Padun, Kus, and then Port pacing Mas. Not a bad outcome for Movistar, I don't think. And then Izaguirre pacing the GC group for the Luchenko. So, yeah, a bit weird for Ineos. Maybe not the ideal outcome. But Izaguirre is losing time. He's losing first 25, 35, then it's up to 50 seconds. He's losing to Padun and Kus, and he's not really gaining on, like, especially Port against Izaguirre, and Port is a quick, is better on the climb than yeah. Izaguirre. I'll work through the recap quickly because there's so many talking points to discuss, and I want to hear Benji's thoughts on them. Then Padun eventually dropped Sepkus. Yes, you heard that correctly. Mark Padun, the Ukrainian 24-year-old on Bahrain victorious. We first noticed Kus pulled for 8 seconds. I was like, that's weird. Like, first of all, we're thinking, why is Padun pulling Kus? Kus went to $1.70 in the live odds, and then Padun drops him. He attacks him. He's like, Kus, if you ain't going to pull, get out of here. Gaps him. Kus can't respond. They'd attacked with like 8Ks vintage at this point. Kus attacking way too early. Port's just pacing Mas, pacing that group. He's got them at 10 seconds, 14, 16 seconds. But Padun opens up on them. And he opens up another up to 40 seconds on the Port Mas group. And back in the GC group, once Izaguirre finishes his pull, chaos starts to open up. Lopez attacks. Kruijswijk has dropped. Gaudu and O'Connor were pulling. O'Connor looked very strong again. The stage hunter guys are attacking. Thomas can initially respond to Lopez's first attack, but not the second one. And so O'Connor, Lopez bridge across to the Mas Port group, which is second on the road just about, with Kus somewhere in no man's land. And Thomas can't respond. You see Gegenhardt looking behind, trying to pull for Thomas. And eventually, I think Thomas has to do it himself, or Izaguirre was pulling. So a good outcome for Movistar. The problem is the stage wins up the road with Padun. He eventually rides away and takes this stage. A crazy win for Mark Padun, which we'll talk about his previous palmares in a second. And we've got Lopez, Mas pulling for Lopez, trying to gain time. And they got 2-on-1 on port. They drop O'Connor. I mean, when Lopez was bridging across, Mas was also pulling, which is a bit weird. But eventually Port attacks, or Lopez attacks, and Port then counters, drops Lopez, gaps him easily, and puts big time, like not big time, but given that it was the last K, a lot of time into Miguel Angel Lopez. So Port the strongest Ineos guy by far, and just a really, really weird, weird stage the way it played out. With this is the top 10, Padun first, Port second, 34 seconds back. Lopez third, takes 4 bonuses, 43 back. Same time as Haig. Haig finished really strong. 2 Bahrain guys in the top 4. Ben O'Connor fifth. Kus sixth on 52. Guru seventh on 56 with Mas. Thomas only finishing 3 seconds behind Mas. So he saved a lot in the last 2Ks. Grant Thomas, Luchenko 10th with Valverde at a minute and a minute 04. Kelderman not having a good stage, nor Quintana or Kruijswijk. But first things first, Benji, who's the big winner or losers of the day? Obviously Padun, but Ineos happy today, or Movistar, or are both kind of like about par?
I think they both are a bit on par today, because you've got the situation where Thomas is now seen as the rider that is not leading Ineos anymore for the competition. They're going to be marking Port now, And the reason that he got away today is that he wasn't being marked the same way than Thomas. So I think they had a perfect play today, and the fact that people were starting to undervalue Port due to the fact that Thomas has been the rider everybody has been looking at for a few days now. And we noticed the last few days that Port wasn't really closing down the gaps too much. And I thought perhaps it's because he's not good at the moment, but I'm guessing that it probably was a wise decision then at that point, and it brought undervalue on him in the eyes of the others. And I think that was a really good card that came into play today, the fact that he was not being marked as well as a Thomas, for example. And otherwise, if Thomas attacked, I think Lopez would have followed.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact that Port attacked was Mas following, Mas being the second person on Movistar, following the so-called second person before the stage started on Ineos. And we saw that Kuz was going to respond to that and so forth. Movistar is not going to be perfectly happy because not only did they accidentally send the wrong rider with the rider that they didn't see as the head leader of Ineos, they didn't send Lopez with the attack of Port. They sent Mas there, so I'm guessing that Movistar themselves are going to be like, ah, that's a bummer. And towards the end as well, the fact that Lopez as well gets dropped after attacking Port, undervaluing Port again, because he probably thought, I'm going to drop this guy. But that was not the case. I think that if they all were together and had to fight each other on similar levels, then Port and Lopez might not have been able to drop each other. But the fact that Lopez had to bridge that up and then try and drop Port probably made that Port was basically a bit more fresh at that point.
Yep.
And Port also decided not to counter Kazem Paden when they decided to go ham a few kilometers before that. So wise riding, I'd say, for Port. I wouldn't say that he wasn't having the legs to follow Kuz and Paden at that point. I think he was keeping in mind that at that point, a lot could still happen on the climb. So all in all, both teams have their moments where they could say, ah, oh, this was good. And their moments where the hindsight outcome of it is not totally ideal yet, because while Port is now in the leader's jersey for Ineos, Thomas is a bit farther behind. And also there's another mountain stage to come. So now they know that Ineos is playing the card of Port in the coming stage, unless something changes again. But I feel like it's much more transparent who's leader on each team, and that's going to be a benefit for the other teams that are against them, and perhaps not as much of a benefit of the riders that are more transparent towards other teams, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think finishing the day, you look at the results, I mean, it was a bit chaotic for Ineos, but I think Port was so strong, and this revised GC, Ineos are going to be more happy with than Movistar. Port goes into the leader's jersey 17 seconds ahead of Lutsenko and 29 seconds ahead of Thomas, so Ineos still got two guys in the top three, Kelderman on 33 seconds, Haig on 34, Lopez on 38. I think Movistar really would have liked Lopez at least ahead of Thomas today rather than being 9 seconds behind, because Izaguirre on 38, great performance from him, and O'Connor on a minute 8, Guru 9th on 112, Parapantra 117. Where did Parapantra finish the stage? Honestly, I feel like Parapantra should have pulled for O'Connor, I think O'Connor's mistake, Benji, was not getting in the Kuz Padun move, because he was really, really strong. But I mean, 34 seconds Padun ahead of Port.
I think Parapantra actually pulled for O'Connor for quite a bit there.
Oh,
I think
did
a good kilometer, and then he was done for and dropped. But I think if he went all out, he probably wouldn't be still 23 seconds behind. So I think he just didn't go all out pulling for O'Connor. He just rode a pace, if that makes any sense.
I think we can all truthfully say none of us saw Mark Padun winning this stage. I mean, yeah. I'm scared to look at what the odds would have been for him before this stage. Crazy level, crazy performance. I haven't seen any data on the times they did and the speeds, etc. This is his first World Tour win. I guess he's 24, and he has shown talent in that in 2018 when he was 21, he won a Tour of the Alps stage, hilly stage, you know, 38k an hour average. I'm not sure if it was whether it was from a break or not, but it was stage five, and he beat good riders. He beat Bennett, Hirt, Ciccone, Ben O'Connor, Pino, Lopez, Froome. This is 2018 pre-Giro Froome. So yeah, he'd be good riders there, but then we've not really seen anything. You might remember he was in that break with Narvaez in the Giro last year. He got a mechanical, so he couldn't contest the win, ended up coming second. He is looking a bit leaner now in the Dauphiné this year, but he's not been very good, and he said he had bad legs the first few stages, but then first mountain stage absolutely crushes it. Haig coming fourth as well. The Bahrain guy's just looking really strong. But yeah, what do you think? Do you think we'll see another result from this from Padoon, Benji, or is he just like a completely hot and cold rider?
He's been inconsistent throughout his career so far, and yeah, his results in the past definitely shout that he's got talent, but it has been on a consistent level, and therefore he hasn't had the opportunity to go for a AGC in proper fashion. And therefore, I'm more looking towards breakaway stages in Grand Tours as an opportunity for him in the future. But he's already tried that. We've had that Giro stage last year that Narvaez won indeed, but I think that he can do more. I think that he showed today that he's, on his day, a very, very good climber, definitely. And I think that Bahrain, yeah, I don't know what would have happened if Bahrain hadn't helped Haig a bit more today. I don't know. I don't think that would have done much. I don't think that's worth it. I think that Baden for the stage is a good thing that happened, and I'm curious what he will do tomorrow. Will he try to help out Haig then a bit more, considering Haig could enter the top three if he plays it right? He's now 5 seconds behind that. And or he goes for another stage, but it's not an up mountain finish tomorrow. We'll go into that in a second. But I think I also want to mention the losers of the stage in my eyes, and that's a bit Astana, because they had two leaders and they finished with, well, two of them losing time significantly, in the sense that Lutsenko drops to second and is now 17 seconds behind the leader's jersey. And Izaguirre drops 5 spots in GC because he had to work for Lutsenko. So you think they were forced to choose the wrong leader by having Lutsenko in leader's jersey?
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure how Izaguirre would have gone anyway. I mean, he had plenty of opportunities. There were lots of opportunities to bridge across to, you know, people were bridging all the time. Lopez bridging to Mas with O'Connor, Gaudu attacking. The wheels were there, taking people up the road if you had the legs. I just think Lutsenko and Izaguirre were both full. I think it's good keeping them close on GC for tomorrow, because tomorrow is a bit of it's a difficult stage, one of the hardest stages we'll have this year, I think, from La Chère to Le Bain to Le Jet. 148 Ks. We have one all category climb, but there's three climbs at the start in the first 84 Ks. 11 Ks 5%, 12 Ks 5%, 12 Ks 6%, with no flat, just descents in between them. Then a longer descent and then sort of a valley section before the Col de Juplin, 11.7 Ks, 8.5% descent to Morzine, and then I think it's a false flat uphill, 2.4 Ks, 5% up to the line. It's a hard day. It can be difficult to control. It's a bit easier for Ineos, the gradients, than today on the first two major climbs. I think Van Baarle, Kwiatkowski, Rodriguez, Amador, very short pulls today. But then on the Col de Juplin, you want riders in the valley before then. So how do you see tomorrow playing out, Benji? Astana have kept Lutsenko and Izaguirre close on GC. Do they send riders into the break so they've got someone in the valley before Col de Juplin? Do you see any team trying to do that tactic?
I would consider that definitely an option for multiple teams here. First of all, I'm interested what Movistar will do indeed, but I'm also intrigued by that small hill at the start of the stage, that 2 kilometer hill just before the start, well, just after the start. And what I'm curious is, will that breakaway form on that small climb? It's too short for that. And that's why the descent could come into play and rouleurs could get in there as well. And then you're looking at perhaps getting an Arkas in the break as well again, but perhaps Movistar decides, let's put Erviti in the breakaway as well. And if multiple teams try and get satellite riders up there, this could become a very interesting stage. But I think the issue here is that between Colombier and Juplan, we've got a really relatively large valley, like 20 kilometers roughly, which means that you can't just go on Colombier and hope that the flat section is survivable alone. You can't do that. So you need someone in the breakaway if you want to go on Colombier. And I'm guessing that the stage therefore might be a bit more close in the first section also. I hope not. And therefore, I think that the last climb might be everything all out. It doesn't seem like the stage like last year, where the last stage of Dauphiné, everything could explode. While the GC is set up for something like that to happen, because a lot of teams are still behind and need to get rid of people that are ahead of them. It just seems like that plateau section works against that. You got the same feeling or not?
Yeah, I think it's going to be more difficult for the race to be broken up completely. Yeah, because of the steady gradients. I mean, Colombia, let's have a look at the gradients. Oh, Aravi has steep sections at the end. It's false flat at the start, yep. So it is steep in the last 4Ks. Colombia a bit more irregular. Juplin is pretty steady. I think Sayport is the strongest tomorrow. It's going to be difficult. He's got that sort of false summit and then a short ridgeline section after the Col de Juplin, then a descent. I don't know how technical it is to Morzine. I mean, he's not the best descender in the world. I've seen he's been losing the wheel all week. And then a sort of a punch of 5Ks or 7Ks up to the line that's not a steep gradient at all. I think the problem, this is why I think Movistar are not going to be happy with today's result. It's because, look at Lopez, 38 seconds behind Port. I mean, if you try a descent attack and wait for late for a descent attack off Col de Juplin, you're not going to make up 38 seconds. It's not possible. So, whereas if it was, say, 10 seconds on the road plus the 10-second bonus and you were 12 seconds back, it's sort of possible for that late attack. Whereas Movistar,
yep,
they're going to have to attack on Col de Juplin and try and drop Port and Thomas. I think they can drop Thomas. I think Mas, do you think, if you're in the Movistar bus today, Benji, do you say to Enric Mas, you're riding 100% to support Lopez pulling, or do you try and use him as an attacker again?
I'd have him go for Lopez because the thing is, if Mas attacks, then they're going to put Thomas in that wheel. And then, well, what's going to happen? Mas and Thomas have not been the strongest of their teams. And Thomas is ahead of Mas in GC. Then Lopez needs to respond anyway. So I just don't see a situation where a Movistar rider like Mas could make a move where it comes into play for Lopez. Today it kind of did because Mas was able to pace for Lopez. But I feel like the fact that people now know that Lopez is the leader of that team makes it that they don't necessarily need to respond to Mas either at the start, because the guy is still a lot behind. Like, Ineos could just fake pace and Lopez will try and bridge up to Mas at a certain point, because I don't think Mas is going to take 40 seconds on that climb on the Ineos train. No. And I don't see a position or way where that could come into play and actually help out Lopez. And I think that using him for Lopez just like that might be playing out better. But how? That's a good question. The only way that you could do so is if you pace in the group where everybody still is. But then what's going to happen? You're just going to bring Thomas and Port a bit further. So it's very hard to look into what Mas and Lopez should do here. I think that Lopez should be brought to a point where he could just attack all out on this climb. And today wasn't enough. He was able to get away from the people in the elite group, but they all had already given it an advantage to Port. So will Port be able to follow if Lopez does that from the group where Port is in? That's a different question. And that's a question we don't have the answer to yet. And I'd love to know that, but I think it's going to be hard to play with Mas as a rider to get into a bit of an attack and try to bridge up to that or try to force others to pace in that group, because he's just too far behind for that, I think.
You know who I think wins the stage in GC?
It's possible. I'm scared.
Jack Haig. I think you've got an opportunity. He's climbing so well. He finished that climb so strong. You got Movistar and Ineos potentially looking at each other. So you got a group of Lopez, Mas, Port, Thomas, Haig in that group over Col de Juplin. I think he has an opportunity to try and put them under pressure where they look at each other and say, no, you chase, no, you chase. I think he's probably a better descender than Thomas and Port, probably equivalent to Lopez. And it's reminding me of that Fuglsang stage where Fuglsang and Landa went clear with Haig in Andalusia or Valenciana, maybe last year before lockdown. I think Haig could win this stage. Also, I mean, Movistar are going to be going for GC. Valverde could also win the stage. Like, if it's a big group at the finish, which we hope it isn't, then Valverde should be the favorite given this sort of uphill drag. Again, mm-hmm. he should be winning out of that group with the kick he showed the other day. I think Gegen Hart, Ineos would have liked him a bit closer on GC. Maybe do they try and get him in the break, Benji? If they want to be, the thing is they got Port with the yellow jersey.
Yeah.
I don't see Ineos, you know, if Ineos were really behind the eight ball, then they start playing big cards like Gegen Hart on the early climbs and try and get him to bridge to a break or something like that. But yeah, I think if I'm them, I send Amador in the break. And if I'm Movistar, I try and send, Arkas or Irvati in the break again. Once again, if I'm Bahrain, I try and get Haller or some again in the break. He's been pretty tired. But yeah, I can't wait to see tomorrow's stage. I think it'll start pretty early. So today's finished at 2:30. But yeah, I don't have a firm handle on what will happen. I hope it's not too defensive. Yep.
You feel like a team like Astana should try a descent go on one of the earlier climbs again, like they did in the past. They've got Aramburu here, Izaguirre, Lutsenko, and Rodriguez, all four of which are on paper pretty decent descenders, and a few of them even great descenders, like Izaguirre and Aramburu. So perhaps, I just don't know whether the Aravi or Colombier descends are really technical. They don't remind me as technical descends, but I do recall, wasn't Aravi in that stage where Hirschi crashed last year in the
tour?
Or am I be completely wrong? All in all, I do think that I'd love to see that. I'd love to see a situation where Astana just breaks open the reins like they did in Basque Country, because that could really come into play here if they can bring Ineos into a situation like Pogacar was brought into a situation in Basque Country.
Yeah, because that's a good point.
They're not top-notch descenders, Thomas and Port. So forcing in a descent will be much better than forcing on the climb against them.
Exactly, that's a good point. Astana aren't going to make up the time they're behind on Col du Juplan. Like, it's not happening. So you need to do something different. Perhaps, you attack over the top of the Colombier, you got satellite riders in the valley, you're going to go a long valley, and then you got to, I mean, you probably get chased down by Dylan Van Baarle and Kwiatkowski. But at least you're putting Ineos under pressure. I think that's, Benji makes a fair point. The thing is, Lutsenko's only 17 seconds behind Richie Port. With the 10-second stage bonus, he would only need, if he just makes it over the Col du Juplan group, he can...
Nah, I do it. I generally decide during the stage to go for Izaguirre, because it finished in a descent. Yonny Izaguirre is one of the best descenders in the peloton, top 10 at least.
Yeah.
He's the rider I would go for on this stage. It's 20 seconds difference, but you're not going to win this race with Lutsenko, I think. And I think there's a bigger chance that you are able to put in a crazy attack in the descent with Izaguirre and force something. So based on the descending I've seen from both those riders, Lutsenko has been decent at descending, but not at the level that Izaguirre is at. So I dare to just say, the moment that we have two riders left, and it's Lutsenko and Izaguirre, we don't do what we did today.
Exactly.
We're riding for Izaguirre instead of Lutsenko.
Well, I think definitely don't just have Izaguirre pacing with Port and Carp the road. That's just, you're asking to lose that way. I think if it gets to that stage, you've already lost. I think the better, use Izaguirre as an attacker on a descent at some point. Maybe as a backup option, if it's slower than we expect tomorrow, have Lutsenko in the GC group and he can try something on that sort of 2.4K, 4.6% finale, try and gain 5-6 seconds on Port on the road and take the 10 bonus, then you're getting close to winning GC. But hopefully it's a bit more open than that. But let us know down below, who do you like for the stage? Will Sepp Kuss go clear on Col du Juplan? He's behind on GC, I think. Where is he now?
One minute 26.
He attacked too early again today. Will Mark Pudun take back-to-back stage wins as the new mountain superior mountain man? I mean, is he out of contract, Benji? Mark Pudun's out of contract, so he just earned himself a bigger contract for next year, I think. But yeah, let us know down below what you think, and we'll see you with the recap of stage 7 tomorrow.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.